Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up tomorrow, I think it'll be a really good show. We have filmmaker Ken Burns. He's launching a civility and democracy initiative in conjunction with his PBS documentary on prohibition. Ken Burns says the prohibition era and today have more politics in common than you may realize. Ken Burns tomorrow. Also, public advocate Bill de Blasio on his partnership with Craigslist to help you keep tabs on your landlords. That's coming up tomorrow here on The Brian Lehrer Show. Right now, have you ever broken down in tears at work or yelled at someone on the job before you could stop yourself? Ann Kramer is a journalist and author, and her latest book is titled It's Always Personal, Emotion in the New Workplace. She says that work environments are changing and that these days it might be more okay to cry at work, or at least people won't judge you as harshly as they may have in the past. The book is full of new statistics and tips about how to navigate emotions at work, and it's full of feeling. Ann is here with us in the studio this morning to share her findings. Hi.
Hi.
And listeners, do you have questions about how to manage emotion in the workplace? Do you have a story about when you have either been a participant in or even a witness to expressions of emotion in the workplace that either made people uncomfortable or were considered out of bounds when they should have been or shouldn't have been, or where it was unclear where the line was? Call in and tell us your story, share your experiences, and you can ask questions if you have any questions, maybe even some supervisors. For Ann Kramer, it's always personal emotion in the new workplace. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Is now a good moment to look at emotion in the workplace for some reason?
I think now is a particularly interesting moment to look at it. For the first time in history, women are over 50% of the workforce. And I think that that, coupled with the new findings that we're developing in neuroscience, which show the different ways that genders process and deal with emotion, is a kind of opportunity to step back and think, hey, is this a chance to have some new workplace norms?
So it's a gender issue.
It's partially a gender issue. I mean, there definitely is. In the 60s, when women went to work following the Equal Employment Act, men were the only people in the workplace. So to be equal meant to act like a man. And that meant denying essential aspects of their emotional selves. And what is being sort of revealed today through neuroscience is that there's a lot of, in fact, differences between the genders that might be helpful to know about in the workplace.
So you did a survey, and some of the things that you found when it comes to gender, for example, 46% of workers recall feeling anxiety on the job. Young women feel the most anxious.
Young women feel the most anxious, and young men thought it was the most appropriate to use anger as a tool of management. 41% of women reported crying during the past year, but I was surprised by the fact that 9% of men admitted to crying on the job during the last year, which was higher than I had originally thought it might be.
Really? Even 9% is higher than you thought it might be when you found 41% of women admitted to it?
It's true, but I also uncovered on the kind of biological front, women are, in fact, hardwired to cry four times more frequently than men. We produce six times the amount of prolactin, and shockingly, I didn't know this, women's tear ducts are anatomically different from male tear ducts. So when we do cry, tears tend to fall down our face, whereas men might be feeling the exact same sort of emotion, but because their tear ducts don't do it, they just look like they're welling up a bit.
Hmm. And women under 45, you found, are 10 times more likely to cry at work than men over 45. So there's a gender split there.
Yeah.
But is there also an age difference? Is this changing generationally?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of pieces there. I think that the older we get, the better we tend to get at emotion sort of management and the more sort of self-reflective we can become. But I also think that with the younger cohort of people entering the workplace, used to the 24/7 transparency kind of social media world where literally every aspect of your life is on display constantly, I think it leads to a slightly different perception of what can be expressed at work. And I think that that's kind of, you know, refreshing and liberating.
David in Tarrytown, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, David. Hi.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Just a comment. I could relate. The first job I ever worked in, I was working for a law firm. It was a small firm. It was a very good firm to work for, but the guy who ran the firm broke everybody down in tears on a daily basis, including myself sometimes. But the secretaries were constantly breaking down. It was just a terrible place to work. I lasted there about 3 years, but just before I left the guy with a three-page single-spaced letter telling him, kind of spilling my guts. I figured I had nothing to lose, and I told him all the reasons why I thought it was a poorly managed firm and it could be a lot better if he could sort of get himself under control. And I assumed that the letter ended up in the wastebasket, and I ran into the guy about 5 years later. I hadn't seen him. I ran into him at a party, and he pulled me aside, and he said, you know, about 5 years ago, you wrote me a letter. I thought, oh, my God. He actually read it. And he said, I want to tell you that I keep that letter in my top drawer, and every time I feel like I'm getting a little bit out of hand, I pull out the letter, and I read it, and it kind of sets me straight.
Wow.
And I was just, you know, just a comment, but that was sort of my introduction to the workplace, and it was highly emotional, but it was kind of what I felt was kind of a response. I don't know if I'd do the same thing today, but it seemed to work.
What's the moral of the story?
The moral of the story, I think, is to actually step up and say something.
Absolutely, I agree.
David, thank you so much for sharing that. And he says he wouldn't necessarily do the same thing today. There's a certain abandon of the innocence of youth.
There very much so is. But I also think that he also talks about one of the things that he helped his boss discover, which was sort of what I call in the book metacognition or self-reflection, the ability that when you think something's about to sort of, you know, erupt or bubble over, you actually do have the ability to step back and sort of slow the pace down a little bit. So I think that's one of the things that's important for people in a work environment is to realize that if you address something before it reaches the kind of boiling point, you'll be better served and the organization will be better served.
Ann Kramer, my guest on WNYC. Her book is called It's Always Personal, Emotion in the New Workplace. And Carla in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Carla.
Yeah, hi, Brian. It's really a pleasure to be on your show. I've been listening to you faithfully.
Thank you.
I manage a staff of 10 people at an educational setting. They're young children, and I do not allow emotions to be expressed for two reasons. And the first reason is because children they see us as role models, and we can't have emotions of disturbing the workplace. So, secondly, the technique that I use is I know the staff fairly well, and I read them constantly in terms of their emotions. And if I see something or if I feel something, I'll call them in. I'll deal with it on a one-to-one basis, and I'll simply say, you know, what are you feeling today? How's that working, and so forth. So that's the technique that I use. But I don't think emotions are. I think it's just sort of job site specific.
Well, I think there's a degree of that, but I would also suggest that, in fact, you probably are using emotion every second of your day in terms of empathy and compassion with the young kids and your younger staff. And on some level, I feel like emotion has been lumped into this sort of, you know, bipolar kind of world where, you know, you have it outside of the office or the workplace, or you never get to have it inside. And in fact, every decision that we make has to be informed on some level by emotion. And your judgment call, even in how to deal with your more junior staff members, you're employing your sort of emotional sensitivity to figure out how to address that and then deal with it from there. So I allowed you. I think you're actually doing quite the right thing with your staff in terms of not having what they're feeling affect the children.
Well, thanks very much. I appreciate that.
Carla, thank you very much. And when she talks about working with teachers,
mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, when we talk about emotion in the workplace, probably the first thing that comes to mind for most people is some stereotypical idea of an office, and people mm-hmm. are working at cubicles, and somebody's ranting and raving about something or other. But you get into human services situations like teachers.
Yeah.
And many others, you
right.
know. How about a doctor or a nurse expressing emotion in the workplace around patients or et cetera, et cetera?
Well, there have been really fascinating studies recently, particularly relating to the healthcare field, where they did a survey of nurses who were actually more empathetic and compassionate with their patients. They recovered more quickly from surgery. They got out of the hospital faster. They had less absenteeism within the actual staff of the hospital. And so by being kind of proactive in some level about letting the nurses show their natural kind of caring giving instinct, they improve the bottom line performance of the hospital.
And you say in the book that frustration is the dominant emotion that Americans say they feel at work.
Mm-hmm.
Frustration. 73% of people surveyed said that they felt frustrated. Did that surprise you?
Well, no. I mean, I did the survey right at the, you know, kind of core white-hot center of the meltdown. And so I think that people were probably feeling that they weren't getting enough information, that they were doing the jobs of, you know, two people with half the resources and were simply feeling overwhelmed and had no recourse during that period of time to actually address it in any way. So I think that might vary depending upon where in the economic cycle you take the survey, but that was certainly clear at that time.
Because that does beg the question, or maybe you just answered it, frustrated with what? And you seem to be saying frustrated with being short-staffed.
I think frustrated with being short-staffed, frustrated with being lack of resources, frustrated with getting very little feedback from people. There's just layers and layers of things that can prove frustrating in an operation.
Listener posting on our comments page writes, I work with a woman who cries regularly at work, particularly in meetings, when she's asked questions she can't answer. No matter how carefully the questions are posed, the response is always the quivering lip, tears, and sometimes she leaves the meeting while crying. I don't know what the question is behind that, but there's a story.
Well, there's a story, and I think that that's often a thing that happens when people feel ill, you know, unprepared. It's the kind of emperor's new clothes psychological phenomenon, in fact. And if I were the manager of that woman who chronically teared up in meetings, that's excessive. And I would step by and I'd say, you know, if you have issues with, you know, getting your act together and having the information required for the meeting, I suggest you actually really prepare yourself better in
advance. Is it also manipulative? Because here's another post. Joelle from New York City writes, it's never okay to cry in an office situation. It's unprofessional, unnecessary, and counterproductive and aggressive. As humans, we can all be moved to tears from time to time, should be kept to a minimum, and never be manipulative.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's this sort of myth of crocodile tears in the workplace that I find very rarely has been present. You know, tears are our single most powerful communication tool that we have to sort of express that we're feeling joy or anger or awe or anything. It's actually not an emotion. It's a byproduct of almost every other emotion. And it's also our most natural biological reset tool. So it allows you to kind of reestablish your emotional equilibrium. So I think occasionally if it happens, it's a biological phenomenon. It shows something's going on. It's like the warning sign, for instance, on your car dashboard. You know, if the check engine goes off, you better get into your, you know, body shop and see what's going on or your car's going to fall apart on you. Same thing's true for a person who's crying chronically. It's like a check an engine point. Figure out what's up.
Rick in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I just wanted to say, you know, I've been working in the performing arts for a long time, and there's an awful lot of anger in the performing arts when things aren't going right, and that I feel like the way the workplace is viewed nowadays, there's no room for anger in the workplace, and I feel like that rather than allowing for more crying and for no anger at all, that really there should be some work towards figuring out how anger can exist in the workplace, because it's necessary.
Rick, you know, anger, give me an example from your experience. Anger about what, expressed how?
Well, for instance, I work in the performing arts, and when a show goes on the road, you have only a limited amount of time to put up the show in a different city, and the people in different city need to be fulfilling certain agreements to be able to make the show work. If they're not meeting their agreements, your show won't be able to happen the way you do your show, the way it's contracted to work. And at some point, you need to be able to push your work forward. You need to be able to say, you're not doing your job, and I'm angry about it, and I need you to do something about that to make it better. And no amount of crying is going to help.
Let me ask our guest. Ann Kramer, what are you thinking now?
Well, frankly, I think anger is the one emotion that most people that I talked to and surveyed found very demoralizing and not productive to doing good work.
I think crying is absolutely demoralizing too, and I think it undercuts people in the same kind of manipulative way that anger does.
I think crying undercuts people from the perspective that no one's really trained to know how to deal with it. I think people tend to look at it and think it's intrusive, and it's gotten this sort of baggage over the years that it's negative behavior when in fact it's communication sort of piece.
What if on the anger point? Mm-hmm. What if someone's pushing you to your limit? What if somebody is repeatedly refusing to obey what they're supposed to do?
Well, then that to me is a situation where you have a talk with them and say either your contract's terminated or you're going to be fired if you don't do it. But I don't think anger is necessarily the motivator. I think anger can sometimes be powerfully motivating, internally directed. You know, you didn't get that piece of business, or in fact you aren't dancing to your level of whatever it might be, or, you know, connecting on some level, and that can drive you to excellence. But I think directed at other people, almost always anger is not an effective tool to get them to do what you want them to do. They'll snap back at you.
We've only got 30 seconds left in this segment, and I've refrained from bringing up Speaker Boehner the entire time because it would have just been too easy and cheap a shot.
Correct.
However, the fact that he's been so in the news, crying not once but repeatedly on the job as Speaker of the House, is this an inspiration? Is this allowing more men to cry in the workplace, or is this just an anomaly that's him? We have 15 seconds.
Well, I think I discovered that there are tribes of people who consider themselves criers and who don't consider themselves criers. Boehner is clearly in the crying tribe. If I were him, I would actually get it a little bit more under control. But it happens when he's feeling powerfully connected to some American ideal, I think. I don't believe they're crocodile tears.
Ann Kramer, author of It's Always Personal, Emotion in the New Workplace. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Talk to you tomorrow with Ken Burns and Bill de Blasio and more. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.